speaking on step number two, which is came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So Susan, we're anxious to hear what you have to say about that.
Hey everybody, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Susan Tornin. And I've had a heck of a day. My computer did an update, knocked my printer out. So I tried to do a restore on my printer, and my computer died. So I went down to wash clothes this morning, and my dryer won't dry anymore. And you know what? It's just life. It's just the way life is. So I'm not wearing what I intended to wear today, because that's all in the dryer, sitting there wet. And I had to email me what I was going to work on tonight to myself on my phone, which is okay. You know, we all have all kinds of technology. But I can guarantee you my computer will be up and running by next week, and my dryer will be fixed by tomorrow. Because I know somebody who knows somebody who knows how to fix dryers. And my computer, I set it to restoring itself again before I left the house, and if it's not fixed by tomorrow, I will be very upset. But, step two. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And I hear people agonizing over this step, and it's really, really very, very simple. Okay? Insanity has nothing to do with my depression. It has nothing to do with someone who's bipolar. It has nothing to do with that kind of. It's sanity in regards to the drink. Okay. And what I tell my girls to read about step two, because you know I'm big on the big book, I have them read the doctor's opinion, Bill's story, there is a solution, and more about alcoholism and we agnostics. Pretty simple. You read some of that for step one. I'm going to go back and reread it, because it all applies to step two too. We're coming to believe that there's something bigger out there than us. To tell my own personal story as far as this step goes, I knew there was a God out there. I'm going to tell you that God was very punishing. I was told from the time I was a very small child that I was going to hell and there was nothing I could do to change it. And I truly believe that. I was born on June 26th of 1960, so I had 3 sixes in my birth date. I weighed 6 pounds, 6 ounces. I was born at 6:36 p.m. and I was 16 inches long. And my grandmother told me that I was a spawn of the devil. And she told me that every day. I swear to God, she told me that every day. When I was about 4 years old, I was probably about four, and I don't know what it was with chocolate. I don't remember if it was pudding or cake or cookies, but I stole it. I can guarantee you I stole it because I was a liar and a cheat and a thief before I ever picked up a drink. But she asked me, she said, did you take that? And I said, no, Monty, no. She whooped me and she told me, she says, you're going to hell and there's nothing you can do to change it. Because you're a liar. And every time I cheated, every time I lied, every time I did anything wrong, I was going to hell and there was nothing I could do to change it. So I got here and I knew that there was a God, but that God wanted nothing to do with me. So I had a real hard time with this step. I really did. So here's what my sponsor did for me. She said, take my God. I have a very loving, forgiving God who's huge. Borrow my God. And you know what? I saw my sponsor's God was good. He was loving. And he did things for her that I had never seen a God do for anybody in my life. Her God didn't tear up things. Her God didn't punish people. Her God was merciful. So I prayed to Audrey's God. For a very long time I prayed to Audrey's God. And she taught me little things. She told me to hit my knees every night and say thank you for the day. And she told me to hit my knees every morning. And she told me to say, please help me stay sober today. Well, I was embarrassed about hitting my knees. I don't know who I thought was going to see me. I lived alone. But I said, I can't do that. Somebody might see me. She says, so you're going to take your glasses and you're going to take your cigarettes and you're going to put them halfway underneath the bed. And while you're down there, you might as well just say a little prayer. And I did that for the longest time. It was became easier for me, and I don't know when it was I stopped putting my glasses and my cigarettes under the bed, but I would put those, every night I would get down in there and I would put my glasses under there and say, Audrey Scott, please help me stay sober. Thank you for helping me stay sober today and help me stay sober through the night. And I would get up in the morning and I would be pulling them out and I'd say, Audrey Scott, thank you for helping me get through the night and help me stay sober throughout this day. It was always Audrey's God. And I don't know how long it was. I can't tell you if it was 3 months, 6 months, or a year, or 2 years. I don't really remember. It was a long time ago. But eventually it stopped being Audrey's God and it was God. The God that I have today is that all-encompassing, powerful, merciful, loving God. And he's not out there somewhere, he's in here. My God isn't mysterious to me anymore. And he's so big. And I spend an awful lot of time asking this question of people. You know, God's never going to do anything that he and I can't handle together. He's never going to put me in through anything that he and I can't handle together. So when I think I can't handle it anymore, my question is, how big's my God? And I ask my girls this question a lot of times when they say, I can't do this anymore. My question to them is how big is your God? Because if you can't handle it anymore, how big's your God? Because God's right there with you. So, if your God's not big enough, borrow mine. Because my God's big enough to go around. I lend my God out frequently to people who don't have one, who've never had one, to people whose God's not big enough to help them. I lend my God out frequently. I don't go to church. I know many people who do. When I go to a church and I sit there, I don't feel that connection. I don't know if it was all those years of sitting in church with a minister standing at the pulpit and screaming and yelling and talking about how it was, you know, we were all going to hell and fire and brimstone and all of that. I don't know if it was that. And I've gone to churches where they talk about a loving, forgiving God. But I just don't feel that connection. Take me to the beach. Let me go down to the peninsula and sit next to that shoreline with my toes in the sand and the waves coming up and lapping up against me. I look out at the horizon. That's where I feel God. Let me sit in a forest, looking up at the trees, and the sunlight's dappling in the leaves. That's where I feel God. So no, I don't go to church. But if one of my girls says to me, I go to church every Sunday and it makes me feel wonderful and I feel close to God, I say, go for it. Whatever works for you. But this step is about coming to believe in that power greater than yourself. One of the biggest things, it's that small amount of faith goes a long way on this step. Don't worry about having full faith, just trust that the group of drunks in front of you believes that it will work for you, so you trust in them. That was said to me at a retreat when I was maybe about 2 years sober. And the speaker, after she was done speaking, I went up to her and I said, can you repeat that, please? And I wrote it down. And my mother was at that retreat with me. And my mother's sponsor was there, and my sponsor was there. And we all wrote it down, all four of us. And I have held on to that piece of paper, and I put it in my notes on the steps. Because this bears repeating. A small amount of faith goes a long way on this step. Don't worry about having full faith. Just trust that the group of drunks in front of you believes it will work for you, so you trust them. The group of drunks. Let that be your God if you can't have any other. So many people get hung up on the God question. So many people don't have God. So turn that word into group of drunks, good orderly direction, whatever you have to do. Turn it into another word. Don't let people get hung up on God. If you're dealing with someone who has a bad concept of God like I did, turn it into something else. Don't push him away by saying you have to believe in this all-knowing, all-wonderful person, you know, thing in the universe. Don't let him get hung up on that. Don't push him away with that. I'm really big on that because I've seen people get pushed away by super religious people in this fellowship. Lighten up a little bit is my feeling on it. Okay, I already talked about restored to sanity. Okay. Now, the restored to sanity, you can rephrase that thing to sane behavior, if you like that better. Some of the behaviors, insane thoughts, if you want to call them that. The insane thoughts, this time I'll control it. I'll have just one. I'm only hurting me. I drive better when I've had a few. I can't remember what I did, so I must have had a great time. The first drink starts a new binge. Unpredictable behavior. Deep resentments. Drinking for spite. Lack of self-criticism. Emotional instability. Fear. Fits of anger. Dishonesty. Delusions. Blackouts. DTs. Suicide. And a few refusal to see that we are ill and need help. Okay? That's some of the insanity that we're looking at. That's what we're curing with this step. That's what God can help cure you of, those insane thoughts. I used to say, I'm not hurting anybody but me. I didn't see that I was hurting my mother, my father, my sister, my brother, my friends. I have one friend. I just talked to her yesterday. She and I have been friends. We met when I lived in Puerto Rico in sixth grade. We have been friends all these years. After I got sober, I went back to Reading and I made amends to her. And she tried to slough it off with, well, I hurt you too. It's okay. Just, you know, it's okay. Well, 3 years ago, I went back for my 40th high school reunion. And I was talking to her, and I said, you know, I never did get to make a proper amend to you. And I'd really like to do it now. And she goes, don't, because I can't handle it. And I was talking to her yesterday on the phone. And I said, you know, one day before we die, I'm going to be able to clear up the insanity that was between us. And she says, I don't think I can recognize the insanity between us. And that's a truer statement ever said. She didn't drink like me. But she saw the insanity in me. But the only way she can remain friends with me is if she just forgets about the past and we don't confront it. I lied to her. I set her up to be in trouble for things I did. I did a lot of really horrendous things, but the only way she can continue our friendship is if she just forgets about that past. I'm not good with that. I'm not good with leaving that insanity alone. And I will talk more about that when I talk about amends. But I didn't see that I was hurting her at that time. But you know what, that hurt has lasted 43 years. But she doesn't want to open up the wound and tear off that Band-Aid because she's afraid it will kill our friendship, and she wants to keep the friendship more than she wants to get to clean up that wound. But that was insane behavior back then. And I did not see I was hurting her. But I didn't think I was hurting anybody but me. When I got sober and I stopped the insane behavior, and I'm going to tell you, it took me a while. I still tried to be stupid and sober, and it didn't work real well. I still tried to act like I used to act, but not drink, and it wasn't working real well for me. And my sponsor had to point out to me, you're either going to be 18 years old and act sober, or you're going to be 18 years old and you're going to act like a drunk. Pick one. Because if you're going to act like a drunk, you're going to become drunk. And I had to give up my childish ways, is the only way I can put it, because I don't know how many people have ever heard this, but you come into this program and you have to change everything about yourself. You work 12 simple steps and change everything about yourself. Not just one thing, everything. When I went to that high school reunion, the greatest compliment I got from everybody was, "You're nothing like you used to be." If I'm going to tell you, there's 16 of us left from my high school class. There was 54 when we graduated. There's 16 left. I'm going to tell you, we all drank like me. Of the 16 that are left, probably 8 of them still act exactly like they did when we were in high school. They literally walked out to their cars and brought their coolers in with their beer in it. And we were at a winery. I was quite amazed. And I'm giving them my wine tickets because I don't need them. I've got water, I'm fine. And they're all like, "Cool, we can have your wine. Cool." You know, so they've got wine and they've got beer, and they're bringing in their coolers full of beer. And I'm thinking, you guys are all like in your 60s now. You're like late 50s or in 60s. And you're still going to your pickup trucks and getting your coolers full of beer. You haven't changed. And they're saying to me, "It's so awesome, you're nothing like you used to be." And I'm like, "I grew up." Because of 12 little steps. And that step 2 is a major step in that. Because I came to believe in a power greater than myself, and it restored me to sanity. A sanity in the matter of the drink. I no longer could think that I could have one more. I could just have one. I didn't think that I could... I was talking to someone on the phone today, one of the ladies I sponsor, and we were talking about that insanity of, I could just smell it. I could just take a, you know, put my tongue on it, just get a taste. If I just tipped it up and I just got a few drops out of the bottom of the bottle. If I was out of town, who would know? And I'm going to tell you, I've had those thoughts in sobriety. And then I think, I'm not going to stop with the sniff. I'm not going to stop with this little bitty taste. I'm not going to stop with tipping the bottle up, because I'm going to go out on the all holy hell bender. And I'm not stopping. And I'm going to die. I know that. This person had never really recognized what the sign think meant. And I explained it to her. You're going to think about that drink. You're going to think where it's going to take you. You're going to think what it's going to do to you. And you're going to think where it's going to lead you. Think. No, I can't just take that little bitty sniff. And I'm, as my job as her sponsor is to show her what those little signs mean. They're all important. But I came to believe in a power greater than myself. How did I get that power? I got that power from my sponsor showing me that there is a power greater than myself. It was her power at first, became my power. What is the sanity? The sanity is in the matter of the drink. How do I keep that? I keep that by working more steps. I don't stop. I never rest on a step. As soon as my girls are done too, as soon as they have told me, because the directions for the step is, do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a person can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him he is on his way, and that is taking step 2. That's as simple as that. As soon as they're willing to admit that they're ready to try and believe, that's step 2. They don't have to stand there and say, "I got it 100%. Move on. Take them to step 3. There are 20 promises. I did have them on my computer ready to print out. I don't have them because my computer is messed up. But the second step prayer is, I pray for an open mind so that I may come to believe in a power greater than myself, I pray for humility and the continued opportunity to increase my faith. I don't want to be crazy anymore. Now, I know these are not sanctioned prayers in the book, but they're the ones that I use. I really don't have much more to share on the second step. I pretty much run my gamut. But there is one section. You know, I've read this book 1,000 times. I swear to God, 1,000 times. And I moved to Erie, and I started going to the basic text training group with Terry Houlihan. And this is her favorite passage. And I heard her read it, I don't know, 20 times. And then all of a sudden, this light bulb went off in my head. And like, this is a huge promise in the book. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us. No matter how much we tried, we could wish to be moral, we could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will all these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Obviously, but where and how were we to find this power? And here comes the promise. Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself which will solve your problem. That means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And it means, of course, that we are going to talk about God. That is the promise. That they've written that book to help solve this problem. That's your promise. And with that, I'm going to hush up and let you guys ask questions.
Thanks, Susan. So now at this time, we can open things up for questions from our audience. So if you're on Zoom and you have a question, go ahead and unmute yourself and speak up. If you're here in the room, go ahead and raise your hand and we'll get you the microphone and you can ask your question.
Hi, my name is Scott. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Scott.
Hi, family. And, Susan, I've seen you and you work your sobriety for probably at least the last 10 years. And that's the one thing that hasn't changed. People who like you or don't like you or whatever, they come and go. But the one thing that I see is that consistency a decade later, and you're still saying the same thing you did back then, and you're a testament of service and working a program. It really does work if you work it. Thank you for your example.
Thanks, Scott.
Does anyone else have a question for our speaker? Anyone on Zoom?
Hey, Susan.
Hey, Judy.
You said you had that stinking thinking and you thought, if I could just have a taste, a drop, whatever. I never thought that. I thought, I need to get a case and I need to have, I got to make sure there's gas in the car. Because, when I pick up a drink, I'm going to New York, it never occurred to me to have a drink. When I was drinking, I'm sure there were plenty of times I said, I'm just going to go have a drink, But that never happened. And, you so beautifully described the insanity of our thinking. This time it'll be, we just go on and on with the nonsense before we get here, thinking that somehow we can change. So the gals that you sponsor, are they, some of the girls I sponsor, they're like, oh no, I never thought that. Oh, I never did that. I'm thinking, oh, bullshit, you didn't. You know what I'm saying? You can't fool me. But I mean, how do you handle somebody like that if you have somebody who's, I never did those things.
Generally, the ladies that I sponsor are pretty honest with me, and they know I'm not afraid to call bullshit. because if they're giving me a line and I know they're giving it to me, I let them ride it for a little while, and then I will look at them and I'll go, I'm calling bullshit. And they'll say, how'd you know? Been there, done that. And then they're honest. Then they break down and they're honest with me. But usually after they've talked to me for a few minutes, and then they go, okay, I got to own up. I got to fess up. And that's exactly what happened this morning when I was talking to the one lady I sponsor. It was like, we talked and she goes, okay, I got to fess up. I got to tell you this. And she started spewing, and it's like, after she was done, she says, oh my God, I feel so much better. The one thing I tell ladies when I'm sponsoring them, don't lie to me. That is the one thing. I don't fire ladies in general. I usually get fired. But lying to me, the first time you get it passed, the second time, you need to find somebody else to work with, somebody who's going to buy into your stuff.
Good. And you, you know, sponsorship is important. Of course, you still have a sponsor.
Yes, Helen is my sponsor.
Oh, okay. So it's not Audrey you were talking about.
No, Audrey passed away in 2001.
Oh. Okay, sorry to hear that. All right. Good. Great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Who else would like to ask our speaker a question? Anyone on Zoom?
Yes, of course I have to ask a question.
Hey, Susan. Hi, Helen.
Beautiful job tonight. Thank you so very much. An easy question first. That passage that you read, if a mere code of morals, or what page was that on?
It's starts on page 44 and finishes on 45.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
And coming to believe in a power greater than ourselves that can restore us to sanity. When you are working on that second step, you said, you know, it isn't really a big deal. But do you have any of the people that you sponsor try to define what they want their higher power to be? The reason I ask that, I was talking to my sponsor one time, and I said, well, I think God's testing me. And she said, oh, my higher power never tests me. My higher power is there to help me, not to test me. So it made me think about, you know, what kind of higher power I wanted to have. Do you go into that with your girls?
I would tell them to make a list of things that they would like their higher power to be. What would you like? You know, do you want a loving and forgiving? Do you want someone to be open and honest? Do you want, you know, what do you want? And I tell them, you know, if you want a God that's going to punish you, you can have that. You can have whatever makes you comfortable. But I ask them to write down what they want, and to be honest, they really don't get into using that until after we get through step three. Mm-hmm. Because step three is where we really start molding the higher power.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, Susan. Thank you so much for talking about step two again tonight. I'm Leslie, alcoholic.
Hi, Leslie.
And hi. And I guess, you know, when I was new, I was like this. And I continue, I periodically encounter newer women who are like this too. And it goes like they think so much, and they fret, and they fuss, and they research, and on and on and on of what is the ideal God that I can believe in. And I was wondering what you had to say about that. Is that, you know, I mean, I try to not indulge it too much. I mean, it's like, go look for what you got to look for, but in the end, it really doesn't matter. But I was wondering, you know, do you have anyone like that? Were you like that? And how do you deal with it when you do run into someone like that?
Well, we were talking before the meeting. I mean, my dad used to tell me I could complicate a one-car funeral. So I try and keep my girls, keep it simple. Keep it very simple. Don't overcomplicate this. You can complicate this into debt to death. We're not building a golden idol. We're not setting things in stone. This is going to ebb and flow. There's 12 steps for a reason, because the 12th step is where it says, having had a spiritual awakening. So we've got 12 steps to build this higher power that we're working on. So let's not overthink it at step two. They try, and I will constantly be bringing them back with, let's keep it slower, let's simplify this, let's not, you know, that's why I tell them, write down a few things that you would like in your higher power. What do you want your higher power to be? Now let's close that page. Let's go on to three. Okay? And they'll say, well, you know, I'd really like that in a higher power. Okay, well, go back into that page and write that down on what you want for your higher power. Now, turn the page. Let's simplify this. I don't want this to be complicated. I don't want you building a 6-lane highway here. We're building a 2-lane road. So,
I have one more follow-up question.
So just by way of follow-up, and I appreciate your point of view, and I guess I have to wonder then, has it been your experience, you know, that, and some of it, this has been my own experience on the other end, is kind of maybe a dodge to just avoid, it's like foot dragging. In my case, I had to find the perfect God to believe in, and I was wondering if you've experienced that as some sort of resistance.
Yeah, I have, but the book is very plain with the words next, and I don't let my girls drag their feet. I give them time limits. On steps, I say we're going to meet again on this day to talk about this. I want you to go home and I want you to read this in the book, and we're going to meet on this day and we're going to start talking about this step. Because what I have found foot dragging to do is to cause people to go out and get drunk. I don't want people to go get drunk. And what I have found is people who drag their feet enough, that's what they really want to do. They want to go get drunk. People who are serious about their recovery are going to step up their game, and they're going to do the work so that they don't get drunk. And I'm not saying I'm rushing them through the steps, but I'm definitely pushing them a little bit, because my theory is, let's go through the steps, let's get some recovery, and then let's come back and let's go through them a little bit slower this time, because now you got some recovery and you understand better. And I've been doing very successfully with my girls that way. Very, very successfully with my girls that way.
Thank you.
You're
Thanks
welcome.
Very much.
Anyone else?
Hi, Susan.
Hi.
I just had a quick question. That was great,
Who
by the way.
Who are you?
I'm Tara. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tara.
Hi. I was just wondering, do you have a problem with some of the girls differentiating the word insanity from their own mental problems and the insanity of the drink?
That's why I do the explanation of what the insanity is on the step. Why I differentiate what is the insanity that we're talking about on that step. When we sat down and we talked about that step, I said, this is the insanity that we're talking about. It's not your depression, it's not your bipolar, it's not your any of your psych diseases. This is where the insanity is in the matter of the drink.
Right, I know. I know with me, though, I just had a problem, like, personally, like, differentiating at times, like, just wanting to think that my own insanity was taking over sometimes. You know what I mean?
Right, and we talked about that quite a bit, did we not?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
Because you're pregnant, Susan.
And I can. I'm willing to talk about things at any time to clarify.
Yes, you are. You're the best. Thank you.
I love you too, sweetheart.
Hey, my name is Abigail, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Abigail.
Thank you. I just wanted to thank you for leading a very powerful meeting this evening. Just right to the point, and it was very clear and so honest. And I've one day at a time been around for many years. I'm from Erie. Lauder and I live out of town, and we come back and spend time here in the summertime. And I don't know, just coming into this meeting tonight with your lead, it just feels so beautifully grassroots, and I almost feel like I'm a newcomer. And that's how that's how I'm being impressed by what you're saying. It's the same now for me after many, many, many years, as it is, as I get that nice feeling of being a newcomer and taking it in for the first time. So thank you for your service, you know, and thank you for helping so many people to get the program. That's a big deal in this life, the biggest deal. So thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Anyone else on Zoom? Did you have a question, Kevin?
I did, but somebody answered it.
All right. If not, thank you, Susan.
Thank you.